You gave me two choices, and I didn't respond. I did?
Yes. You did respond to him, but then I once again said it. Facing difficulties in material and spiritual life. And then the second topic that we gave Guru Maharaj was Sarvadharman Paritejya, the essence and application of that verse, Sarvadharman Paritejya. So,
in context of facing the, in context of the topic, facing the challenges in life. So Maharaj was speaking on that topic. And
which one? The second one.
The mail that you wrote to Maharaj, you'll be combining both the topics.
Okay, I'll combine both the topics. Really?
I got an email from you saying you'll combine both the topics. So that's why I was thinking of that.
Oh.
So facing challenges in life, plus...
I'll just do the second one. Say the other one, you can tell me about your challenges. Okay, I'm going to ask our three youthful scholars here, don't go away, to recite Bhagavad Gita 1866. And we'll start with Dhanalila. You know the verse? Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja. You know the verse? You don't know? You know the verse? Okay, three strikes and we're out. Well, we'll all chant it together since we all know. Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishyami masucha. Do you remember it now? I'll say, and then you two say, in, you know, duet in response. Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishyami masuchaha. But you already know it, so. Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo aham tvam sarva papebhyo sarva papebhyo moksha yishyami masuchaha. Very good. Okay. Translation. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord has described various kinds of knowledge and processes of religion. Knowledge of the Supreme Brahman, knowledge of the Super Soul, knowledge of different types of orders and statuses of social life, knowledge of the renounced order of life, knowledge of non-attachment, sense and mind control, meditation, etc. He has described in so many ways different types of religion. Now, in summarizing the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that Arjuna should just give up all the processes that have been explained to him. He should simply surrender to Krishna. That surrender will save him from all types of sinful reactions, for the Lord personally promises to protect him. Paragraph. In the seventh chapter, it was said that only one who can become free from all sinful reactions can take to the worship of Lord Krishna. Does anybody here know that verse? A little louder. Taintvandva bhajanti mam vridhavrata. The essence of paraphrased translation. Tesham satati yuktanam That's a different verse.
The person who is...
Yishantantakatam papam.
All sinful activities are eradicated, then he can start my devotional service.
And so there's two conditions. The two conditions are one who is freed from sinful reactions and is fully engaged in pious activities, crosses beyond the duality of delusion, engages in my devotional service with determination. Thus, one may think that unless he is freed from all sinful reactions, he cannot take to the surrendering process. To such doubts, it is here said that even if one is not free from all sinful reactions, simply by the process of surrendering to Sri Krishna, he is automatically freed. There is no need of strenuous effort to free oneself from sinful reactions. One should hesitatingly accept Krishna as the supreme savior of all living entities with faith and love. One should surrender unto him. Paragraph. The process of surrender to Krishna is described in the Hari Bhakti Vilas 11.6.76. Anukoyasya sankalpa pratikoyasya varjanam rashikshatiti vishvaso guptritve varanam tata atmanikshepakarpanye shadvidha sharanagatihi. According to the devotional process, one should simply accept such religious principles that will lead ultimately to the devotional service of the Lord. One may perform a particular occupational duty according to his position in the social order, but if by executing his duty one does not come to the point of Krishna consciousness, all his activities are in vain. Anything that does not lead to the perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness should be avoided. One should be confident that in all circumstances Krishna will protect him from all difficulties. There is no need of thinking how one should keep the body and soul together. Krishna will see to that. One should always think himself helpless and should consider Krishna the only basis for his progress in life. As soon as one seriously engages himself in devotional service to the Lord in full Krishna consciousness, at once he becomes freed from all contamination of material nature. There are different processes of religion and purificatory processes by cultivation of knowledge, meditation in the mystic yoga system, etc. But one who surrenders unto Krishna does not have to execute so many methods. That simple surrender to Krishna will save him from unnecessarily wasting time. One can thus make all progress at once and be freed from all sinful reactions. Paragraph. Final paragraph. One should be attracted by the beautiful vision of Krishna. His name is Krishna because he is all attractive. One who becomes attracted by the beautiful, all-powerful, omnipotent vision of Krishna is fortunate. There are different kinds of transcendentalists. Some of them are attached to the impersonal Brahman vision. Some of them are attracted by the supersoul feature, etc. But one who is attracted to the personal feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and above all, who is attracted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Krishna himself, is the most perfect transcendentalist. In other words, devotional service to Krishna in full consciousness is the most confidential part of knowledge, and this is the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Karma yoga, empiric karma yogis, empiric philosophers, mystics, and devotees are all called transcendentalists, but one who is a pure devotee is the best of all. The particular word used here is ma shuchaha. Don't fear, don't hesitate, don't worry are very significant. One may be perplexed as to how one can give up all kinds of religious forms and simply surrender to Krishna, but such worry is useless. So there's the summary of the first question. Yeah, but I've got this and that and the other thing, and don't worry. Don't hesitate. Don't fear. Just surrender to Krishna. Yeah, but... We were discussing in the Bhagavatam class this morning about the varnashram system, because that's one of the indications that's presented here in the purport of different systems. Elaborately, Krishna doesn't say what the system of varnashram dharma is, but he does say that he creates the varnas. Chatur varna maya shrishtam guna karma vibhagasha. And he certainly speaks about Arjuna's duties as a kshatriya. So, performance of prescribed duties, religious people certainly perform their prescribed duties, or just good people perform their, they're dutiful. But that performance of duty precisely, perfectly, flawlessly, if there is such a thing, amounts to nothing from a transcendental perspective unless it progressively leads to and results in mindfulness of Krishna, absorption in thought of Krishna. That's the objective. Since that's the objective, one can approach the objective directly. Approach the objective directly means take shelter of Krishna. Surrender to Krishna. So that was part of our discussion also. What does it mean to take shelter of? So, it's an active process. It's an internal process that's followed from the internal follows external. I'll speak about it this way. There's a Sanskrit term that's quite common in Bhagavad Gita. Well, it's used several times. Swabhava. You know what swabhava means?
Nature.
Self-nature. Your own nature. Sva means one's own. And bhava means nature. So your own nature. So according to one's own nature, or one's swabhava, one has different duties. Brahma karma svabhavajam, kshatriya karma svabhavajam, vaishya karma svabhavajam, shudra karma svabhavajam. Svabhava. So, ja means birth or arises from. From one's svabhava comes the qualities. If for a brahmana, samatamak sapakshocham shantir arjavam evacha jnanam vijnanam astikyam brahma karma svabhava jam. The behaviors, the activities, the qualities of a brahmana arise from their svabhava. So one of the things that religion from the Vedas or otherwise does is it tries to elevate one to the quality of goodness. And from the quality of goodness, from that svabhava, comes qualities and behaviors. You with me? Yes? So, to stay within the modes of nature, even the quality of goodness, as far as transcendence is concerned, is still binding. You're still within the cycle of birth and death. You're still bound by the reactions to those actions that are religious or of the quality of goodness, even they're enunciated by God. It's good, but it's binding. It's not liberating. And one of the things that Krishna says very early in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita is the Vedas deal mainly with the three modes of material nature, rise above them. But he doesn't just say deals mainly with it, but it's to become the enjoyer of the modes of material nature. Trigunya Vishaya Veda. The Vedas deal mainly with how to be a Vishayi, or an enjoyer, within the three modes of material nature. Nishtrigunya Bhavarjana, rise above the three modes of material nature. So that's the, from the early chapter 2 and throughout here in this conclusion, the message of Bhagavad Gita is it's a transcendental message. Go beyond the modes of material nature. Go beyond the modes of material nature. But what's beyond the modes of material nature? Spiritual world. The Vaikuntha realm. There's the river Viraja that's in between the spiritual and material. Like, here's this, we're in the material world, in case you haven't noticed. And beyond the material world, there's the spiritual world. And that's what we want. But there's this, where the two spiritual and material realms intersect. It's called the river Viraja. And the river Viraja, the modes of material nature are also not active. So we could try for neutrality. Like, you know, become a neutralist, an impersonalist, or avoidist. It's an interesting philosophy or aspiration. I was with some Chinese students recently at university, and I was asking them, what's the goal of Buddhism? And they didn't give an answer, so I said, it's nirvana, right? They said, yes, it's nirvana. And what does nirvana mean? And nirvana means nothingness. So, let's be really clear. The goal of Buddhism is to enter into a state of nothingness. And that's the absolute truth. Because where does everything come from? Nothing. Where is everything going to? Nothing. And what do we have in between? Nothing. You think that there's something, because you think that there's something, then you're suffering. But the reality is there's nothing. Just face the reality. There's nothing. Nothing is. And enter into a state of nirvana. Whew. Very encouraging, huh? But the realm, so Prabhupada was asked, what if someone becomes a successful Buddhist, where do they go? What's the destination of the soul? Yeah, the destination of the soul is the river Viraja. It's neither here nor there. But there's no such thing as void. Prabhupada stated it this way. In God's creation, there's two things. God and that which is from God, or gods, that which belongs to Him. And there's not a third thing. There's not, because void means nothing. So that, then he also said, there's no void in the creation of God. Because it's something, creation is something. There's Him and there's what He creates, and there's not a third thing. So it's an imagination. It's a place where one imagines. It's like child's play. It's a place where there's nothingness. I'm not acknowledging the existence of God, and of not acknowledging the existence of that which is created by God. It's artificial. One of our devotees was describing it something like being in a straitjacket in a padded cell with blindfold on and your ears plugged and you can't see anything, hear anything, smell anything, touch anything, feel anything, do anything. How long can you stay in that situation and think that's happiness? Well, there isn't any suffering because, you know, I'm not interacting with the elements and people that are not nice, and I'm not generating any karma. I'm just like doing nothing. It's artificial. In one purport of Bhagavad Gita, Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha, Prabhupada describes this. Krodha, or anger, or frustration, is the source of this philosophy that says, I want to become nothing. It's like suicide. I want to become... You can't kill the soul, so suicide doesn't work. So you just get a philosophy that says, you don't even have a soul. You don't even exist. What exists? Nothing. Anyway, rather than dwelling on Buddhism, that's a state where the modes of nature aren't acting, but something is active, and that's time. It's described in the Bhagavatam that the souls that are in that position, they're in a subtle body that's dormant, something like a seed that's dormant. And seeds that are dormant, the time energy is still active. So that while it's dormant, the time energy is not moving them. But at some point, tick, 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 tick. In course of time, passage of time, they'll again leave that situation and take on a material body and start activity. Even, you know, let go of their straitjacket, come out of their padded cell. And receive a gross body covering the subtle body and then start activity. Because the time energy is still present. Still active. But in the beyond the river Viraja is the spiritual sky, where time is conspicuous by its absence. Time is eternal. Time as we know it is absent. Time is eternal. And in that time is eternal realm, there's a lot of inconceivable things, like activity that's not past, present, and future. We can't even think like that one. Can you think of something that doesn't have an activity that doesn't have a beginning and doesn't have an end? We don't have experience of that. At least we don't have remembrance of anything like that. That's spiritual activity. And the modes of nature aren't active. And karma is not active. And time is not active. But there's variegatedness. There's activity. There's personality. There's love. It's the uncontaminated state of what we find here in the contaminated state. It's what the soul hankers for, but is looking for in a foolish way, in the temporal realm, in the realm of karma and fruit of activity, and the modes of nature. So it's a very unfortunate circumstance. Very unfortunate. All of this is described when in the third canto, where there's a description of the Kumaras as they're approaching Vaikuntha. And they see Vaikuntha. They're in this Brahman-realized state. So they're doing things. This is also quite inconceivable because they're not devotees yet. They're doing things without a purpose. It's kind of like a child. In fact, that's the description that's given. Just like they're small children, although they're as old as Lord Brahma, They're the oldest sons of Lord Brahma. They're as old as the universe is. But they have little boys' bodies, and they have behavior like little boys. They just go, little boys, little children, just go wherever they like. And nobody checks them. And why they go here, why they go there, you never know. Just going. And nobody checks them. And if somebody does check them, they become very unhappy. So the Kumaras became very unhappy when they were checked from entering into Vaikuntha to see Narayan. So, timelessness, the absence of the modes of nature, all of these things are features of the spiritual world. But now religion is to take one to the quality of goodness. From the quality of goodness to get a glimpse of transcendence. But from the outset, Bhagavad Gita is a transcendental literature. Even with that understanding, Bhagavad Gita is a transcendental literature, Krishna indicates different things that assist one in the quality of goodness. Like these different systems of religion. Meditation, sense and mind control, varnashram. They're, even for the Shudras that are followers of the Varnashram system, or the Vaishyas, or the Kshatriyas, certainly the Brahmanas, the purpose is continued elevation in the quality of goodness. It's the path. It leads to, if followed properly, that's a big, phrase, if followed properly, because properly doesn't mean just doing the do's and avoiding the don'ts, but it's achieving the intended purpose. So if followed properly, then it leads to, it's the path of liberation. Just like the description of karma yoga. Karma nevedikaraste mapaleshu kadachanav. One who lives one's life that way, it's karma free. But that's just detached work. Religious work, detached from the pala of the prescribed duty. And with that, there's some offering of the pala to the Supreme, to Vishnu. So that's karma yoga. But it's incomplete. Or in the language of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his talks with Ramananda Roy, it's external. We talked about that a little bit this morning. External. It's not complete. The internal essence is surrender to Krishna. I can do something like, I conceivably could follow karma yoga with the idea that I don't want the entanglement of fruitive activity. So I'll give the entanglement portion to Vishnu and just say it's yours. And I want to be liberated. And I'm not attached to Vishnu. I'm attached to being liberated. But so the goal is to be attached to Vishnu. And so with that attachment to Vishnu, there's the process of surrender. So in the purport, Prabhupada presents this Hari Bhakti Vilas verse that's quoted in Nectar of Devotion. It's from Padma Purana. It's the six limbs of surrender. And he paraphrases them. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. Accepting things that are favorable, rejecting things unfavorable. For achieving devotion, for achieving the pleasure of Krishna. That which is pleasurable to Krishna, you do that. That which isn't pleasing to Krishna, or doesn't have something pleasing to Krishna component in it, you don't do that. One of the devotees in the morning class said, external, when Lord Chaitanya says it's external, it means it's more or less it doesn't matter. It does matter. You could say, if you say it doesn't matter, then I can do intoxication. I just become an alcoholic, or I just drink moderately. And it doesn't matter. Because it doesn't matter, it's just external, whether I do this or do that, or don't do this or don't do that. It's external. Doesn't matter. It does matter. So in this verse, the abandon all varieties of dharma and surrender unto me, it does matter what we do. Krishna is not saying eat anything, drink anything, smoke anything, do anything, speak anything, behave any way you like, doesn't matter. Just surrender unto me. Party for Krishna, that's okay. That's not the indication. The indication is those other things are subordinate to one thing. It's like in our it's a nice visual image. In the temple room in Chicago, Kishore Kishori Temple, there's a very expensive, beautiful chandelier. It's crystal. Very expensive. It's not just plastic or glass. It's crystal. And it's hanging nicely from the ceiling, and every now and then somebody remembers to turn it on, especially on Sunday. Jitendra is the one that usually remembers to turn it on. And it's very nice. Very nice. But if you didn't have it suspended from that one spot in the ceiling, it'd just be a big bunch of pieces of crystal on the floor. It's not. I've seen chandeliers that are just lying on the floor, and it certainly doesn't look nice. But hanging, it looks nice. But it's hanging from one thing. Because it's hanging from one thing, it's all very nice. So the whole of the Vedic culture is very nice, provided it's suspended from the one thing. The one thing is attaining attachment to Krishna or surrender to Krishna. When that's there, all the other features, varnashram, meditation, charity, study of the Vedas, and all those things have some merit, some value, because of that surrender to Krishna component. All other things are subordinated to that one thing. That's what it means. Like the different parts of a chandelier are supported by one thing. That surrender to Krishna is the essential feature. So therefore, prityaja, abandon, place in the secondary position all these things to the thing that goes in the primary position. Surrender to Krishna. And so then, that's the natural question, what is surrender to Krishna? So that's why this reference, the six components. Doing things favorable, rejecting things unfavorable. Then there's four more. Considering that Krishna is my maintainer. That doesn't mean I sit around do nothing in my house waiting for Krishna to maintain me. But I'm understanding it's not my work that's maintaining me, it's Krishna that's maintaining me. I'm the servant of Krishna and Krishna is maintaining me. That's the consciousness of the devotee. Where does the ability come from, the intelligence come from, the strength come from, the health come from, the body, the mind, the senses, the everything comes from Krishna. Krishna is my maintainer. I'm working for Krishna and Krishna is my maintainer. It's Krishna that's maintaining me, not my work that's maintaining me. And then I go to the temple on Sunday and that's my worship of Krishna. My activity itself is by Krishna's mercy providing for my maintenance. And Krishna is my protector. And two more. Who knows what the other two are? Vakshishya titi vishvaso boktritve varanam tava. Krishna's my dearmost friend, and atmani, humility, dainya, is another element of surrender. Because how can you surrender without humility? In the Sharanagati songs by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that's the first set of songs. There's 56 songs, something like that. And some number representing each of the six. So the humility is the first one. because in Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the songs, he describes his life. It's kind of an autobiography in a song form. He describes the aristocratic family in which he was born, and how he spent his childhood, and da 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 da. And now he's at the end. I'm this old person, and I don't even know who I am. I'm old fuddy duddy. I don't even know what the purpose of life is. How unfortunate! I've wasted this valuable human form of life. Humility. It's many songs describing his that the statement of his humility, the reason why he's feeling very humbled. And then the next set of songs is surrender, full surrender, body, mind, and words, manasa deha geha yoki chumor, the surrender of my everything to Krishna. And in that state of surrender unto Krishna, submission, body, mind, and words, atma nivedana, body, mind, and words fully submitted to this personality of Godhead, I understand these other things. My concern for maintenance, it's coming from Him. My concern for protection is coming from Him. Things that will be favorable, I do them. Things that are unfavorable, I don't do them. From this full submission, full dedication of body, mind, and words to His service. In response to this recognition of the unfortunate, foolish waste of time that I've been engaging myself in. That's the message of this these Sharanagati songs. Emuna Durmati. Nice song. So how does that apply to our, what's the first one?
Facing difficulties.
And challenges. Krishna! Krishna! Yeah, but let's get practical. That's practical. Krishna! And then, so I may do something behind after I call out for Krishna, but that calling out for Krishna part is the surrender part. And relying on Krishna for the intelligence, the strength, the ability, the understanding, the protection from the circumstances, from that are the consequence of my past foolishness, largely. I can blame something else, someone else, but it's behind that instrument that's bringing some difficulty or some conflict. It's due to something that's there in my past. I take the responsibility for this, the consequence of my past deeds. Let me keep my attention fully fixed on submission and surrender to Krishna. That's first and foremost. That's a life in devotion to Krishna. I was having a discussion and thinking about this, the application part, because that's what I was asked to speak about. Way up here is perfection. And somewhere down here is where we are. Maybe there's some perfected souls here, but probably not. So, but we're taking up a practice that's a transcendental practice. I mean, the teaching of Bhagavad Gita is a transcendental teaching. Devotional service, chanting the holy name, worshipping the deity, the activities are transcendental activities connecting the soul to the transcendent Supreme Lord. Meanwhile, the modes of nature are still acting because they're not there yet. So one of the discussions I was purposely, I helped arrange a conference call with some others to discuss this topic. Until we become transcendental, To what degree, I put the question this way, to what degree are we a transcendental movement? To what degree are we followers of our ashram, and to what degree is there a blend or mix? You know, thinking of our society in general. Because the Varnashram system is there for those that aren't transcendental. It's a social structure, like the Svabhava. According to the contact with the modes of nature, one has a certain Svabhava, and based upon that Svabhava, then there's duties, there's behaviors and qualities with which you do those duties. It's a nice discussion. We didn't reach a conclusion. So we're the final verse, this eight or this instruction of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, is we should look to taking shelter of Krishna. Other things may also be there that we attend to, the varnashram duties, for example. It wouldn't be right if a sannyasi got a job, or if a grihastha didn't have a job. It just, you know, well, I'm just depending on Krishna. Now, if one is factually a transcendentalist, factually, fully on the transcendental platform, then such a position can be taken. Or not taken, but you know they're free to take or not take, and if not taking, it's not, there's no sin. Krishna gives the argument to Arjuna that if the non-performance of duty, in fact, it's karma nivikarshi mapaleshu kadachana, or the na karma palahetu bor. Yeah, so don't be unattached. Don't be attached to the non-performance of your duty. Because if you're attached to the non-performance of your duty, there's sin. Because performance of duty that's prescribed without attachment, that's sinless. There's karma-free. But not only is karma, but it's bad karma for non-performance of duty. So, aside from those situations where there are perfected souls and the non-performance of duty doesn't bring a reaction, it doesn't bring bondage. For the rest of us that are not in the perfected stage of devotional service, we perform our duty. And there's protection from by Dharma for our following of our Dharma, of our Svabhava, our prescribed duties. Do them for Krishna, that's the transcendental part. Follow them properly. But don't forget don't just do your duty and forget the part of surrendering to Krishna, because then it's just completely on the material platform. There isn't a transcendental benefit to be derived from that directly. It may help one become situated in the quality of goodness, but there's no direct transcendental benefit, and our teaching is take shelter of Krishna. So anything else, whatever, something. Somebody loses their job, or so they're driving in their car and they're hit from behind in a car accident, or something that happens in life today. You have some difficulty. There's some turmoil in the material field. Something. It's always something. So, in such a practical application is. Take shelter of Krishna. And if it's in the social arena, see that you're following your prescribed duty according to your nature. I remember Mukunda Maharaj, really very early in the movement, he was asking Prabhupada it's recorded. He was asking Prabhupada, Swamiji, if you see someone being beaten, are you supposed to go and intervene and help them? Because, you know, what if you're not a Kshatriya? And, you know, Kshatriyas are supposed to protect, but what if you're not a Kshatriya? And we're supposed to be, so what are we supposed to do? Prabhupada didn't give a clear answer. Certainly at other times he said, how can you not assist when someone is being harmed? If you're a gentleman, you see someone in being harmed, you do something. You see something, you do something. So, again, this is this question of, I'm just pursuing, maybe we'll get some discussion going, but supposing I'm a brahmana, or supposing I'm a shudra, and it's not my dharma to give protection, so what do I do? What's my duty? You say common sense, forget what your duty is, man. You go and help the person. Don't just stand there. Help the person. What if it's not my duty? What if my family may, if something happens to me, then my family may be put at risk in addition to this person being put at risk. What's my duty? You know, call 911. But should I do something immediately? Maybe that's not, it's not such a common example as far as practical application. But so, when circumstances arise, we should certainly think of Krishna and depend upon Krishna, rely upon Krishna for the intelligence, the wisdom, the strength, the ability to do whatever it is that we're going to do and do it properly. And, you know, get some sense of what is my position. Like, you know, supposing amongst all the assembled persons, you come to know that somebody's having some problem in their marriage. Now what are you supposed to do? You know, just don't intervene, don't get near it because it's none of your business. Should you do something? What should you do? Or somebody has something. The scan goes, think of Krishna. How can the mood of being in service to Krishna and depending upon Krishna and considering what is my position? Certainly if one is in the position of invested with some authority and responsibility, let's say, you know, there are two Bhakti Vriksha groups, so, you know, either you're the organizer of the Bhakti Vriksha group or you're a member of the Bhakti Vriksha group. You want to do something, so consider what's appropriate given the those who are carrying responsibility. Certain go to the person who's having some responsibility and share, I don't know what to do. I want to be of some help in this circumstance, but I don't know what to do. While maintaining the right decorum and confidentiality. Anyway, there's so many details that to give examples it's difficult without the details. So just go to principles. Mood of service, think of Krishna, think of what your duties in general are given your nature, and consider from that position, even if you don't know exactly what to do, and even if you don't, because you don't know what to do, you don't do something. By continued, ultimately by purification, Krishna will guide you in the course of life. Strive to become pure so that you'll be a better instrument of Krishna overall. And in the meantime, place yourself under proper guidance and direction from those that are guiding you so you can help get some sense of what would be appropriate in your particular, in this some particular circumstance. As much as, as it seems to be appropriate. There are different scales and levels of things that we have the opportunity to act upon, to deal with. I mean, the application, something like this, the application part gets a blur because you have to know the particulars of a situation to know how to apply this verse. And that's why I'm having a little trouble going more deeply in it, because it so much depends on particulars. What you would do in one situation is not what you would do in another situation, depending on the particulars. Or a similar situation, depending on the particulars. Okay, with that blur ending, any discussion or comments? Yes?
When you're talking about Swabhava, according to one Swabhava, he would perform prescribed duties and he would take the shelter of Krishna or guidance from some good associates.
Okay.
But if one's Swabhava doesn't... Once Swabhava doesn't allow him to know what is his prescribed duties, and he doesn't know that.
That's why we need direction. We need guidance. How many times, the answer is many, many times, how many times does Prabhupada in his Bhaktivedanta purports of Bhagavad Gita say, under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master? Many times. So your statement is, or the question is, when we're covered by the modes of nature, how do we know what modes of nature we are? Because we're covered by the modes of nature. Like that, right? So, scripture can tell us, but there are some symptoms by which we can understand. Many devotees report like this, wow, that sounds like me. And that sounds like me, and you know, so it's hard to discern because we're this big mix of different qualities. Not so stark and so you know, it's not such a clear cut. We're a mixture of natures, largely. Still, there are more prominent qualities than others, there are less prominent qualities. Some people are more kshatriya-like, some people are more brahminical-like, some people are more vaishya-like. Just leave somebody alone for a while and they're figuring out, you know, how to make some money out of something. So they're vaishya-like. It's just they're different natures. And then there's the under the guidance of somebody that understands how to engage somebody properly, what their duty should be.
If one Swabhava doesn't accept to take the bona fide shelter.
No, that's not. That's not Swabhava. That's Asura.
But
a godly person of any of the four varnas can take shelter of a qualified person to guide them.
But
it's not the don't go there.
But we don't see everybody taking the bona fide shelter.
Yeah, there's a reason, because there's asura bhav. That's the reason.
There is no solution for that.
There is solution. It kirtan, prasadam, give them association anyways. And be very tolerant when they kick you in the face or insult you or you know, do something ridiculous. By association. I've seen it. I could tell you stories, but there isn't time. Just by association, even mean-spirited persons become changed. Here's a book distribution story. One of Prabhupada's disciples, a Mataji named Nidra from Denver Temple, since when she became a devotee when she was young, and she's been performing 6 to 8 hours of book distribution every day, ever since. So one story she tells is, one day she was distributing books and somebody came over, seemed curious, and said, "Oh, that's a nice, can I see that book? How much do you want for the book?" And they negotiated the least amount that they could get for the book, give for the book. They took the book and threw it right in the trash, you know. Threw it in the trash. She said, "I just wanted to get one of those for the least possible amount and trash it." That was the introduction with this lady. Some time passed and she saw the lady in the Govinda's restaurant. So she went over and, you know, was surprised and was going to say hello, and the lady gave her, you know, "Don't get near me. I don't want to hear any of your, you know, Krishna stuff. I just came here for the restaurant. You know, don't bother me." And then she saw that she was becoming a regular restaurant person. And then after some time, she saw the lady helping, you know, wash the pots in the kitchen of the restaurant. And then later the lady started coming to the temple, and the lady became initiated devotee. And she changed through association and prasadam. Although initially she was inimical. That doesn't happen to everybody, but it happened to this lady. So, from the asura spirit to the godly spirit by association, and the opportunities for purification. Something else? Yes?
Does the purity of who gives association matter?
Yes, very much.
So, in our stage, from where we are, how do we give freely association? You know that we ourselves are struggling to.
How do we give, or how do we get?
Give.
Become as pure as you can. You give according to your capacity. You know, one of the things is you can distribute books. And, you know, I may be a very incompetent personality, but this book is fully competent. And people become devotees from receiving books, reading books. So many descriptions. Prasadam. And, you know, similarly, prasadam prepared by a pure devotee has different efficacy than prasadam prepared by somebody who's not a pure devotee, somebody who's, like, you know, just becoming whatever it is. But still, it's prasadam. It's transcendental. So, the foremost thing for you, for each of us, is to strive to become pure. So we're better instruments of Krishna. And whatever you have, you use, because that will also help you become pure. It's your part of your purification to become dear to Lord Chaitanya by trying to carry out his instruction of Krishna. Teach the message of Bhagavad Gita to others, you become dear to Krishna. "Well, I'm not such a good devotee myself, so how can I teach the message of Krishna?" Teach the message of Krishna as you can understand it. And you'll become purified. And if Prabhupada was the one speaking that message instead of you, then the other person would certainly get more benefit. But you can't give what you don't have, so you give what you have. It's service. For purification. And then there's family, you know, the family members. Whoa. My dependents are dependent upon my purity. I better get it together. And so on. Anything else?
I was thinking on the point of performing the duty without attachment.
Okay.
And I think it's kind of difficult to do, you know, perform a duty without getting attached to it, because then you will not make justice to performing the duty.
No. You're entitled. Adhikar means In Hindi, what does it mean? It means right.
Right.
Yeah. So you have the right. You can be attached to your duty, but don't be attached to the fruit of your duty. And that answers your question. How to be attached to the duty without being attached to the fruit requires some transcendental component there. You're attached to doing your duty for Krishna. And therefore the fruit goes to Krishna, not just... Because if you're attached to the activity or the duty, minus Krishna, you're attached to the fruit. Always. Does that take care of it? Okay. Rati?
Maharaj, you talked about the Vraja River. Is it the same as the Brahman?
Say it again slower.
The Viraja River that you were explaining.
Yeah. No, it's not the same as Brahmajyoti.
Oh.
It's spoken of in the third canto as it looks like, at least as far as the reading that I went over through it several times, the causal ocean. The causal ocean in which Garbhadakshay Vishnu lies, or Mahavishnu lies.
Because you're mentioning that who attain to that place are also, they have the ability of falling down again. Because, you know, the people who are like, who aspire for nirvana or nothingness, get to Viraja River.
Yeah.
Is it similar to...
Aruya Krishna Parampadam Tada Patantyado Nag. So, yes, they can fall down.
So, they also say that the people who attain to the Brahman also fall down, so...
Yeah.
So I was thinking that they're probably the identity, but they're not the same, but...
There's some similarity, there's some difference.
Okay.
And they're different, although there's some similarity. Material condition, there's some similarity, but there's some difference. We're already falling.
When in difficulty comes, we should think.
When what comes?
When in difficulties come.
When difficulties come.
Then we depend on Krishna.
I hope so.
And understand that Krishna will give us the intelligence and ability to deal with it.
Yeah, the difficulty may not go away so quickly. Krishna doesn't make that promise.
So when applying this, even for small things, like for example, is that good or no? Like, I'm late for something and I depend on Krishna. Krishna, please help me to go faster.
No. No, not like that. Nice try. We don't make Krishna our servant. That's not what it means to surrender. Something else.
Yeah. I understood the maintainer, how Krishna is the maintainer, but how do we understand Krishna is the protector?
How do you not understand Krishna is to protect? Can you protect yourself? Can you protect your family? You do. You're the servant. But ultimately, I'm dependent upon Krishna as the protector. To whatever degree there is protection, Krishna is the protector. Not me. It's not my protection efforts. It makes protection. I'm the servant. I do the service. But Krishna is the protector.
Means what is Krishna protecting? Our service to Krishna?
Whatever there is, material or spiritual, he's the protector. Yes.
I'm not sure I got when you were speaking about attachment to non-performance of duty.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I got it right, but you said that...
Arjun wanted to leave the battlefield. He was attached to non-performance of duty. Karma sannyas.
I'm not sure. Did you say that perfected souls can not perform their duty?
Yes. Because for them there isn't duty. Duty is for those who are involved in the modes of nature. I have a duty born of the impulses of the modes of material nature. But one who is beyond the modes of material nature, they don't have duty. But they may still do something anyway. To set example, that was one of the things that Krishna said to Arjuna. Arjuna, you're thinking, first of all, you don't have the qualification to not perform your duty. But even if you got to the stage where you're qualified, you don't have a duty to perform, you still perform duty to set a standard, or set an example for others. But supposing someone's on the platform of spontaneous devotional service, and in that spontaneous devotional service, they neglect a duty. There's no sin or fault in that, because they're fully transcendental. There's a nice lila we were discussing when we were in Mayapur in Kumarahatta. There's a place where it's very close to Calcutta, some distance from Navadvipa. It's where we ended up, because from there we went to the airport and the train station and stuff. So in Kumarahatta, it's a place where Srivas Thakur, one of the Panchatattva members, after Lord Chaitanya left Navadvipa to take sannyas, he couldn't stand being in Navadvipa, seeing the places without Lord Chaitanya. It was too painful for him. So he left. He went to Kumarahatta. And some years later, Lord Chaitanya was traveling ostensibly to Vrindavan, but he passed through. He wanted to do a number of things, but he passed through Kumarahatta. When he reached Kumarahatta, Srivas was absorbed in a meditation. He was meditating upon Krishna, and he was thinking that how much he was missing Lord Chaitanya's association. And he opened his eyes, and there was Lord Chaitanya. And he immediately fell at Lord Chaitanya's feet, grabbed hold of his feet, and began crying in ecstatic love, saying how you're so kind to your devotees. And so Lord Chaitanya, several things happened. He stayed for some days. And this is described in Chaitanya Bhagavat, a long section. And so interacting with other devotees who were also in Kumarahatta. Then, some days later, he came to Srivas' home and said, "Srivas, I don't see you doing any occupation. Householder's duty. You have a large family, an extended family, and there's so many persons depending upon you, and you're not doing anything. Can you explain?" Srivas looked at him, he picked up a stick, and went, 1, 2, 3. Lord Chaitanya said, "Srivas, I don't understand your reply. Can you explain?" And Srivas said, "If on the first day I don't have anything to eat, and the second day I don't have anything to eat, and the third day I don't have anything to eat, then I'll go and jump in the Ganges and drown myself." And Lord Chaitanya said, you have understood completely the purport of my teaching in Bhagavad Gita." This is Lord Chaitanya saying, "My teaching in Bhagavad Gita, yoga kshema vaham yaham." But the first part of the verse is, "Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana paryupasate, tesham nitya biyuktanam yoga kshema." Unto those who are fully devoted to me, with mind fixed in me, fully absorbed in me. And said "Srivas, even if the goddess of fortune has to undergo austerities, you will never have to undergo austerities. I will always see that your family is taken care of and you're not in any difficulty. Carry on. So it was a fault. He was pointing out a fault in the execution of his swabhava, you know, his duties, apparently, as a householder. But he's beyond the modes of nature. So he has no duty. So Lord Chaitanya, as Krishna is the provider of those who are under the modes of nature and performing their prescribed duties, he's the one that's providing for them. He's their maintainer. He's the maintainer of Srivas Thakur and Prahlad Maharaj and, you know, different devotees who are beyond the modes of nature. So for someone who is in such a situation, neglect of what might be considered to be duty is not a fault. But otherwise they do their duty because they're showing example. Someone else? It's just someone else that hasn't... Yes?
Maharaj, in some of your lecture I have heard that Krishna confirms that do you really want me? And he gives us some obstacles. So what does it really mean by I want Krishna?
Well, what you're referring to is something that Prabhupada said. I was just repeating something that Prabhupada said. It's not like in every circumstance you have to, like, you know, an obstacle course. It's not like that. But Krishna wants to know our sincerity. So, the way the Prabhupada said it is Krishna will ask, are you sure you want me? What if there's an obstacle? Are you sure you want me? What if there's sense gratification? Maybe some sense gratification instead? You sure you want me? And so different ways Krishna will see, are you really so? What it means that we really want Krishna is the word sincerity. Sincerity is a nice word. Sincerity is a nice quality, but it's also a nice word. The derivation of the word sincerity comes from a Latin word that describes marble that does not have any lines in it. Like, you know, fully black or fully white or... Because many kinds of marble, there are different colors and tints and designs in the marble. But like in Italy, it's a Latin, the Latin derivation is marble that has no lines. Because they use that for sculpture. Other things can be for, you know, buildings or whatever, you know, materials. But sculpture is, there's no lines. So that's very special quality. So sincere means there's no lines. There's only one thing. Do you really want me? Or is it a mix? So to really want Krishna, is it just one thing? Mame kam sharanam. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. That's what want only Krishna is.
So his love for us is conditional?
No! He's reciprocating with our submission to him. So what do you really want? Let's do it the other way around. Devotees sometimes pray, Krishna, please take all the impurities from my heart and leave just pure devotion. And Krishna starts removing the impurities from our heart and we go, wait a minute, not that one. That's my favorite one. You get the idea. Yes?
In addition to what Mataji was telling, like, it so often happens, like, even when we want to perform some devotional service, we have so much obstacles in that. So, how do we, like, really see that, like, when we are trying to do something...
How do you see it?
Or, like, how do we, like, take it? Like,
how do you take it?
Yeah, like, obstacles in devotion. Like,
you take it... You take it that... minimally, Our class this morning was the Say Yes to Krishna class. That was the verse. It was Brahma speaking to Priyavrata. Priyavrata was one of the sons of Swayambhuva Manu. They were persuading him to become the emperor. He didn't want to become emperor. He was happy doing what he was doing. And Brahma said, you know, you have to accept the plan of the Lord. So each of us, his argument is, you must accept, there's no non-acceptance. And we each of us get a body and a mind. And with it, a certain amount of happiness and distress, and there's nothing you can do about it. You can try to adjust things, but you're going to get a certain amount of happiness and distress by the arrangement of one who is the ultimate person. So accept that. So accept it. Accept it. What do I do about the obstacles? There's an obstacle. And by my Krishna consciousness, I can rise above the obstacle. Because can obstacles stop the flow of devotional service? Pure devotional service can't be stopped by obstacles. It's going to continue anyway. Even in, you know, our obstacles are little. Even in extreme obstacles, who can stop Prahlad Maharaj's devotional service or Haridas Thakur's devotional service? Haridas Thakur told the Qazi, you're the representative of the king, and the king's the representative of God. You're entitled to punish me as you feel is appropriate. But I'll tell you one thing, if you decide that because I'm chanting the holy name of the Lord, you should kill me, you can cut my body into 1,000 little pieces and I'll continue chanting. Because it's not coming from the body, coming from the soul. I'll continue chanting. But you decide what's, you know, so we don't have such obstacles. But whatever the obstacles are that we have, they cannot, in the language of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that devotional service which is not caused by anything material nor checked by anything material is fully satisfying to the self. So render devotional service even there's an obstacle, not checked by the obstacle, with determination. It may not be fully effective, like when Prabhupada came and he had a service to do and nothing was happening. He tried this and tried that, nothing was happening. But he understood, because I'm carrying out the order of my spiritual master, he's pleased. The endeavor is the perfection. It's one of our phrases from book distribution. Sometimes people say yes, sometimes people say no. Sometimes they say insulting things. And we just go on with our devotional service because it's pleasing to the spiritual master. The endeavor is the perfection. And it's when we become attached to an outcome, it's very painful. It's not satisfying even people say yes. Not like the satisfaction that comes from just performing the service in a mood of devotion. And we continue despite the difficulties, the obstacles, and we feel something. We feel some reciprocation from Krishna. Commonly, just by staying in that position of surrender to Krishna, the obstacles just vanish. But it may not happen so quickly. And it may not apparently happen at all. But that happiness is happening. The submission to Krishna happiness. And there, with that comes spirit. So sometimes it helps those, if Krishna sends the obstacles by his internal potency, they're there to help us become stronger in our determination. So that when the obstacle is gone, we understand Krishna put the obstacle, Krishna removed the obstacle, Krishna is very kind. and now my determination is stronger. I'm fixed on Krishna more than I would be if there wasn't an obstacle. Krishna is very kind. That's what we do. Stay fixed in recognizing Krishna's kindness. And continue with even double the determination to carry out the service nicely. That's, you know, we may be weak and we may not be able to do like that. But that's what we should do. And practice like that. And it becomes, our strength grows. Our convictions grow. Our realizations will grow. Our determination will grow. Our Krishna consciousness will grow. So little obstacles compared to, you know, get used to it. It's an ongoing obstacle, you know. But it's not all obstacles. It's many, many times it's completely other things. But I was just hearing Prabhupada say this in a conversation. We're not in Vaikuntha. This is the material world. We're paying the price for our being in the material world. We made a big no to Krishna. And here we are. So we shouldn't expect Vaikuntha. We're paying the price for our foolishness, our misuse of free will. I'm ready to pay the price. Let me simply engage in Krishna's service. Yes. Then we'll end. Okay.
It's a practical application question. I have a question on surrender.
Okay.
If I am cornered and there is a big problem and I don't know what to do, then, you know, I'm able to call for Krishna. Krishna, please help. Is that surrender?
Your question is, what, all the other times or when they're the big time?
That is the first question is big time. I'm cornered. I don't know what to do, which option to take, or I don't even know what to do. I'm cornered. Like, I'm in a big snowstorm.
Okay, whatever it is. So, yeah, that's surrender.
That's surrender. But then there are smaller situations, like I have to go to a meeting and I have to get this information before the meeting, but I am calling that person, he's not picking the phone. So when I remember Krishna, is it surrender? Krishna, please.
Please help me stay thoughtful of you. Not like, can you please get the other guy to pick up the phone?
Not like that. because that is the question he asked.
Yeah,
but what I am asking is, remembering Krishna, is that surrender?
Yeah, sure. There's an instruction, and you're following the instruction. That's surrender.
So then there is no difficulty, like sometimes material world like goes smoothly. So at that time, what is surrender? Always remembering Krishna?
Yeah. Whatever the instructions are that you know that Krishna has asked, certainly that's remember. Manmana bhava mad bhakto mad yaji mam namaskaru. Do those things. Sarvadharmam parityaja. You do those things. Difficulty, no difficulty. Ahaituki. Apratiyata. Not caused by or deterred by anything material. So it's not circumstantial. When devotional service or surrender is circumstantial, then, you know, now you see it, now you don't. It's not really the essence and the heart of what surrender is. The essence and the heart of surrender is it's not circumstantial. Good times, bad times. Good fortune, misfortune. Consciousness absorbed in Krishna, depending upon Krishna. I'm depending upon Krishna, like Sudama is just a wonderful example. When there was nothing, Krishna, you're very kind. When there was everything, Krishna, you're very kind. That's surrender. Not circumstantial. Or deterred by. He was thinking, Krishna's very kind. He didn't ask me, because if he asked me, I'm a Brahmin, I would have to tell. And if I told, then Krishna would give me. And then I would think, oh, I'm very special. I've got all this, I'm special in Krishna's department. He's you know, favoring me, and I become proud. So Krishna didn't even ask me why I came. Krishna is very kind. So, yeah. Good times, bad times. Krishna is very kind. Thinking of him in that way.
And without asking for any help, but just remembering him.
Well, you may ask Krishna for help. Krishna, I'm this.
Give
is,
me the strength to.
Yeah, and the wisdom and the vision and the clarity. How to serve you.
And also one more related to that is, sometimes when I am doing some work, like for example I am setting up the sound system and microphone, I may be chanting Hare Krishna.
Casually,
but my mind is not there. My mind is only in setting up this.
And so that you're a step closer to being mindful by singing, casually.
Because we are, even when walking we chant.
That's okay, that's okay. It's a step in the direction. Think where you were before you were chanting casually. And it's a step in the right direction. Now that you're concerned about it, be more mindful. That's another step in the right direction. Then from being mindful while you're setting up the microphone stand and chanting. There's steps of submission to Krishna.
There is a problem there, because when I put my mind here, then I'm...
No. Then you're thinking you're the controller, you're not the controller. No. Boo!
No, what I wanted to say was, I may not be doing the next step, I may forget the...
Yeah. I gotcha. That's boo. No. Because Krishna will give you the intelligence. If you're Krishna conscious, Krishna will give you the intelligence. Krishna says, perform your prescribed duty and always think of me. So, if you're surrendering to Krishna or your doing of your prescribed duty is just with the mind is a binary processor, and I'm going to either do my duty nicely or I'm going to, remember Krishna nicely, but I can't put the two things together because the mind is a binary processor. It's a one or a zero. The surrender to Krishna is not just the mind. It's the heart. It's a relationship soul to the Supreme Soul. And when that connection is made, then the intelligence is provided, the mental strength, the clarity, the sensual power, whatever you need. That's surrender. I know that Krishna is my maintainer. Krishna is my protector, etc. I know it. In the practicing stage, we don't know it. We theoretically have an idea and we're trying something. But it's not that if my thought is with the holy name, I'll forget to, connect the wire with the plug. Krishna will remind you. He's the source of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness.
Thank you. Whoops.
You have the last one. So go ahead.
Some of the discussions clarified, but I just want to share my understanding.
You're looking for verification that you've understood correctly?
Yeah.
Okay.
When you said that transcendental is someone beyond the modes of material nature, my understanding is of reported Prahlad Maharaj, Sudama. Their feeling is that they never feel bad, whatever happens, they accept everything as a mercy of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And they never feel bad, if whatever happens. They're
beyond the modes of nature.
They never feel bad.
They have a mind that's beyond the modes of nature. So they're thinking of Krishna. It's not influenced by the circumstances. They're thinking of Krishna in whatever the circumstance.
So that's what we understand as
they're beyond the modes of nature.
Beyond the modes of nature.
Yeah.
So many a time I'm noticing that at difficult times I'm able to pray. I'm able to see Krishna's reciprocation at that time. And then as time passes, I start losing faith when I'm looking back to that particular situation, I start losing faith that Krishna actually, it was Krishna actually who reciprocated.
Uh-huh.
So,
it's called the mind. Chanchala. So we don't, a transcendentalist does not place so much trust in that fickle mind. The mind goes here, the mind goes there. We don't, we don't place much value. I mean, we use the mind, but we don't get used by the mind. When those things happen, you neglect. So you withdraw consciousness from that duality and invest consciousness in transcendence or sat. When those situations arise, recognize this is the feature of duality. I'm going to withdraw my consciousness. You need to practice it. Withdraw consciousness from there and put it over here. And you just keep practicing. I'm a visual person, I can't help it. So here, you're walking down, you walk through a forest somewhere, right? Somewhere, sometime in your life. So you're walking down in a forest. Have you noticed that sometimes in the forest, it seems that there's a path in the midst of the forest? How did the path get there? It must be that someone or some animals or someone, something, up and down and up and down and up and down. Through the midst of the forest, there's now a path. Because up and down and up and down. Okay, so now, using that image in your mind, I'm going down the path of life. And there's this tendency that you just described. And, you know, enough that I notice it's repeating itself. Now, I know from Bhagavad Gita and from hearing from those guiding me in my spiritual life, that's duality. That's the mind being subjected to duality. Sometimes it's this, and sometimes it's that. And sometimes I'm feeling confident, sometimes I'm feeling some doubt. Da, da, da. That's okay, that's the mind in being subjected to duality. I'm going to withdraw my attention from that. And that which I know is sat, I'm going to invest consciousness over there. And you make a path. It's a forest. There's no path. Just keep going up and down and up and down and up and down. And next thing you know, it's a path. It's just natural. Just starts to happen. And then, so that thing comes up again and you go over to sat. It doesn't last long. It's not a big struggle. Initially, there's a struggle. And the mind wants to, keep your attention. Keep attention over there. Withdraw attention from there. Put it over here. Practice it. And it becomes second nature. Here's another one. Just a visual image. There's a spill of water. And it's starting to flow over this way. Just take your finger and run your finger going over that way. And what happens? The water starts going over that way instead of this way. Just keep showing the water which way to go, over this way. And it goes over this way. Just do that. Like the mind. Just there's this energy coming that says, oh, I'm doubting. Just put it over there. In sat, that which you know is sat. Just keep doing it. Consciously, purposely, calling, thinking Krishna, remembering Krishna's instructions. Nasate vidyate bhavo, nabhavo vidyate sataha. Just do it. Krishna's instruction, that's the fuel in your tank. Go. Go in that direction. And it becomes second nature. Withdraw from asat, invest in sat. That becomes your life instead of, all that energy wasted over there. Was it real? Was it not real? What's wrong with me? Why am I doubting? Beating yourself up? It's a waste of energy. Go to sat.
last question from the whole Bhakti Diksha. I wanted to ask one.
No. It's 10 after 9. Thank you very much. I have a morning class to give and Mangal Arati to attend. And
so you tell us some steps.
No, I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
I'm going to go because I have morning activity to attend to. If you have some prasadam, I'll take it with me, but I'm going to dash out the door. Thank you all very much. You're the Prabhupada Ki.
Jai.
Jai.
Jai. Jai.